Chapter 42. The Trial of Sirius Black. Part 2.
Minister for Prosecution. Black slaughtered Potters and deceived their son. A Rita Skeeter exclusive.
Mr. Dawlish, Fudge began, will you relate the events of the morning of November 1st, 1981, as you recall them?
The auras on my shift were called shortly after 1 a.m. to an address in Godric's Hollow, where it was reported the dark mark had been seen above the residence.
Dawlish replied gravely.
Please explain what you found there,
requested Fudge. Harry felt Ginny's hand tighten in his, and Ron squeeze his shoulder. He turned slightly in his seat to look at Remus and Tonks sitting behind him. Remus was pale but composed, keeping Tonks' hand in his. Dawlish spoke again.
We found that the house had been demolished, and in the ruins...
He paused for effect.
We discovered the bodies of James and Lily Potter.
Please describe the condition of the bodies.
Ginny recoiled, her brothers hissed, and for a moment Harry didn't know whether to throw up or pass out. Behind him, he heard a muffled groan.
Objection!
Murdo McGonagall was on his feet.
Madam Bones, this information has long been on file and available to the prosecution. It is unnecessary to the proceedings, and cruel to describe the details while the victim's son is present.
Madam Bones turned to Fudge. Minister?
This evidence is being presented in order to establish absolutely the enormity of the offence committed by Black,
Fudge declared. She shook her head.
The evidence of their death establishes that. Further detail is unnecessary. Objection sustained.
Fudge acknowledged her decision with a slight nod of his head and turned back to Dawlish.
Let us move to the evening of November 1st, 1981. Again, I ask you to describe what took place.
Harry leaned forward in his seat as Dawlish began to speak.
We'd been made aware that there had been a major release of magic in a Muggle-occupied area of London. Upon operating to that location, we found an area of the street that had received a blast of extremely violent magic. There was heavy damage, 12 Muggle bodies, and...
He paused.
A portion of a wizard's body.
A portion?
Fudge queried.
Please elaborate.
A finger of a wizard who'd been destroyed in the blast.
Indeed,
said Fudge.
And was the identity of that wizard ever established?
Yes, Minister, replied Dawlish. The wizard was eventually identified as Peter Pettigrew.
Next to him, Harry heard Ron mutter,
Bastard,
followed by a shushing sound from Hermione.
Was there anyone else there at the site?
Fudge asked.
Yes.
Dawlish raised his voice slightly.
Sirius Black was standing in the midst of all the bodies with his wand out.
A murmur ran through the courtroom, and Sirius raised his head to look steadily at Harry. Fudge raised his own voice.
Did you ask Sirius Black to surrender his wand?
Yes, replied Dawlish. And he did so.
Fudge looked round the courtroom and waited until he had everyone's attention.
Did you ask Sirius Black if he had murdered those poor Muggles?
Yes,
Dawlish responded.
We did.
And what was his answer?
Sirius continued to look at Harry, and Remus reached over and put a hand on his shoulder.
He gave no answer, Dawlish explained. He just laughed, and he continued to laugh until we restrained him and took him into custody.
Thank you, Mr. Dawlish.
He returned to Mr. McGonagall.
Your witness.
Beside him, Harry heard Ron ask something, but he didn't reply. He wanted to turn around and check on Remus, but he could not take his eyes off Sirius. Below him, bound to the chair, Sirius kept his gaze steadily on him, and Harry had a strange, fearful feeling that he'd be severing a lifeline that Sirius was clinging to if he turned his eyes away. Murdo McGonagall began the cross-examination.
Mr. Dawlish, you have stated that Sirius Black did not confess to the murder of Pettigrew and the 12 Muggles prior to being taken into custody. Is that correct?
Dawlish nodded.
That is correct.
Once you had him in custody, was he interrogated?
Yes, Dawlish replied. Over several hours every day for the next several days.
I see.
Mr. McGonagall paused.
And during this time period, it was generally accepted that Lord Voldemort...
A collective gasp rose from the assembled courtroom.
...was dead.
Dawlish grimaced.
It was. Well then,
McGonagall mused,
Sirius Black had nothing to lose by confessing, and yet you say he did not do so.
Well,
Dawlish hedged,
he never claimed he was innocent either.
Behind him, Harry heard Tonks mutter a rude word.
Mr. Dawlish, McGonagall demanded, confine your statements to the questions you are asked.
Dawlish glared, but answered,
he never confessed.
The prosecution continued its case. Jameson, Eccleston, and Snetterton were all called to the stand by Fudge, and their evidence supported that given by Dawlish. Nobody seemed very surprised by what the aurors said, and that made Harry feel a little better. He could see now what Sirius and Remus had meant. These were just the aurors who had been on duty, reporting what they had seen and done, except for Dawlish, who seemed to delight in taking every opportunity to suggest that Sirius was a murderous madman.
So, Mr. Snetterton, you took over for Mr. Dawlish interrogating Sirius Black?
Mr. McGonagall asked.
Yes, I did,
Snetterton replied.
And did Sirius Black confess his guilt to you? Queried McGonagall.
No,
Snetterton replied.
But then I never expected that he would.
Mr. McGonagall paused.
Why not?
Because I knew Black hadn't done it.
Good old Snetty,
Remus murmured behind Harry.
Objection!
Bellowed Fudge, leaping from his seat.
He's your witness, Minister,
Mr. McGonagall said.
Overruled, said Madam Bones.
Everyone leaned forward, and Mr. McGonagall went on.
Tell us, Mr. Snetterton, why were you so certain Sirius Black was not guilty?
Snetterton shrugged.
His behavior didn't make sense for a murderer.
So you do not consider his behavior consistent with that of a madman?
Oh, he was mad, all right. Not because he was a murderer. I've seen wizards fall apart like that before. The man was mad with grief.
A rush of whispering went through the room.
When he wasn't laughing, he was crying. And not over you know who.
Over the Potters?
Yes.
Then why was Sirius Black sent to prison?
Mr. Crouch gave the order, said Snetterton.
Did you object?
Mr. McGonagall's voice had taken on a ringing quality.
I did,
said Snetterton.
I was overruled.
Thank you, Mr. Snetterton. No further questions,
said Mr. McGonagall. But as Harry had feared, Fudge rose again.
Additional questions, Madam Bones?
Be quick about it, Minister.
Mr. Snetterton,
Fudge drawled.
Over the course of the investigation of the Potters and Peter Pettigrew's murder, how many aurors participated?
Snetterton shrugged.
Just about all of them, I believe. I see. And how many shared your objection to the conclusion that Sirius Black was the murderer?
Snetterton pursed his lips.
None. I was the only one. Ah, so if you were right, then every single auror on the Ministry force was wrong.
Objection,
said Mr. McGonagall wearily.
Withdrawn,
said Fudge.
One more question, Mr. Snetterton. Did you or any of your colleagues perform a priori incantatum on Black's wand?
No, the wand disappeared the day we arrested him.
Harry glanced around and sighed. The rest of the spectators no longer seemed quite so excited about Snetterton's testimony. The prosecution finally rested its case, and a recess was called to enable the defense to prepare to call witnesses. Sirius was removed from the courtroom under aura guard, and Harry felt himself sag in his seat, his head aching from the tension. Next to him, Ron had an arm around Hermione, who had burst into tears when Sirius was led out.
Harry,
Remus spoke from behind him.
How are you holding up?
Okay, I guess. Harry twisted around in his seat. That was rough.
It's just getting started,
Remus replied. He produced a bottle of cold water, and Harry took a drink gratefully.
After Snetty's little revelation, Fudge is going to come after us with everything he's got.
Are you... Harry hesitated. Nervous, Remus. Remus gave a short laugh.
Yes, I bloody well am. And you?
Harry nodded.
So, Headmistress McGonagall, you yourself never saw Peter Pettigrew alive? No.
Professor McGonagall looked ready to explode. Not surprising. Harry felt the same way himself. Minister Fudge was basing his entire case on the idea that Sirius had confounded Harry and his friends into believing Wormtail was alive. What had seemed so absurd the first time they had heard of it was now sounding frighteningly believable, as Fudge got witness after witness to admit they had never seen any sign of Pettigrew. Harry himself hadn't been called to testify yet, but he knew what Fudge was going to say. Poor Harry. Black cruelly tricked him and used his mental instability. At the moment, Mr. McGonagall was asking his wife questions.
And I understand Headmaster Dumbledore himself was convinced, beyond any doubt, that Sirius Black had been framed.
Yes, Professor McGonagall said firmly. He would never have allowed Mr. Black near our students if he was not certain.
Thank you, said Mr. McGonagall.
Fudge stood up, simpering.
One further question, headmistress. Did the late headmaster himself ever state that he saw Peter Pettigrew?
Professor McGonagall glared.
No. In fact, did he not believe, just as we all did for 12 years, that Peter Pettigrew had been murdered by Sirius Black?
Yes. And he only changed his mind on the word of Harry Potter that Pettigrew was alive. And the word of 3 other eyewitnesses?
Professor McGonagall snarled.
Ah, yes. 2 other schoolchildren and your Defense Against the Dark Arts, Professor.
Yes.
Who resigned the next day because he was found out as a werewolf.
Objection, said Mr. McGonagall.
I will allow it, said Madame Bones.
Professor Lupin resigned for personal reasons,
Professor McGonagall snapped.
Of course, sneered Fudge. But it was the very day after he spent a night hunting on school grounds.
Objection.
Sustained, said Madame Bones.
No further questions,
said Fudge triumphantly. You may step down, Headmistress McGonagall, said Madame Bones, with a gracious nod. Visibly fuming, Professor McGonagall did so. Next defense witness?
The defense calls Professor Remus J. Lupin.
Harry's hands were shaking as Remus made his way to the witness stand and swore to tell the truth. Behind him, he heard Snape say to someone, "You shouldn't have called him. This is a mistake." As the questioning got started, from the way the jury was looking at Remus, Harry couldn't help but wonder if Snape wasn't right.
And then what happened, Professor?
I took the rat from Ron and performed a standard revealing spell. It was Peter Pettigrew.
How are you so sure? It had been 12 years, hadn't it?
Yes, but I recognized him. His eyes were the same, and his teeth. He was still wearing the clothes he'd worn when he told me Jen and Lily had been killed. He has a scar on his chin from a bad hex in 6th year, and a large mole on his neck.
And Pettigrew confessed to the murder?
Yes, said Remus. He looked pale and tired, but absolutely certain. Harry felt a little stronger, seeing the determination in Remus's eyes.
He confirmed what Sirius had said, that he had been the secret keeper, not Sirius. He is the one who betrayed James, Lily, and Harry to be killed.
I see. Professor, is it safe to say that your relationship with Harry Potter is beyond that of a normal teacher and student?
Mr. McGonagall asked.
It is. I can't deny it, said Remus calmly. We talk in my office several times a week, sometimes every day when things are bad.
Understandable. Tell me, would you categorize Harry Potter's mental and emotional state as stable for a boy his age?
Very much so, said Remus, flashing a quick smile at Harry. He is a very strong young man. He's held himself together through some truly horrific experiences. He has his ups and downs, like all teenagers, but I am convinced his word can be trusted.
And you never would have allowed Sirius Black near him otherwise.
Mr. McGonagall finished with a knowing smile. Remus said fiercely,
If I hadn't realized already that Sirius was innocent, I would have killed him myself that night.
Sirius cracked a faint smile.
Your witness, Mr. Fudge.
This time it was Ron who grabbed Harry's arm. Ginny growled quietly as Fudge oozed forward.
Let's return to that night, shall we, Professor? It was the full moon, was it not?
Objection, said Mr. McGonagall.
I must be able to reconstruct all the circumstances to examine this witness's credibility, said Fudge.
Overruled, said Madame Bones. Harry held his breath. My transformation was an unfortunate accident, said Remus evenly.
A very dangerous accident, wasn't it?
Fudge pushed.
You might have killed all three of those children. That is why you resigned, wasn't it?
Yes, said Remus.
But why did you return?
At Headmaster Dumbledore's urgent request.
Yet the danger you posed to the students remains.
We took further steps to minimize the risk. I now leave the school the day before the full moon and return the day after.
Then why did you resign in the first place? Wasn't it because you had been trying to hide your status as a dark creature?
No. It was because I had indeed exposed three students to inexcusable danger through my negligence. I had already drafted a letter of resignation by the time Professor Snape made the announcement.
Harry, breathe, hissed Hermione.
I object to this line of questioning, said Mr. McGonagall.
Move on, Minister, said Madam Bones.
Very well. Mr. Lupin, you forgot your wolfsbane potion because you rushed out to search for Harry Potter and his friends, correct?
Yes, said Remus.
You were concerned for their safety because there was a killer on the loose.
Yes.
And the approach of the full moon makes you ill during the day, does it not?
Somewhat, but... Remus began. Fudge cut him off.
In fact, it was this illness that once gave you a convincing pretext to miss classes, true?
Yes, Remus said curtly.
Professor Lupin, would it be fair to say that you are most vulnerable in the hours preceding the full moon?
Fudge drove on. Harry's head was throbbing, and he felt dizzy. It wasn't until Ron elbowed him and made him gasp that he realized he'd been holding his breath again.
Yes, said Remus. Then isn't it possible that an accomplished dark wizard could have taken advantage of your vulnerable state to confound you?
Remus visibly gritted his teeth.
Possible, yes. Mr. Lupin, you were in Gryffindor House at Hogwarts with the accused, correct?
Yes.
In fact, the two of you were known to be extremely close to the deceased James Potter and Peter Pettigrew, were you not?
Yes, we were.
From your knowledge of his abilities, was Sirius Black a wizard of sufficient skill to confound yourself, Professor Snape, and three students?
Objection, said Mr. McGonagall. Sirius Black was never one of Professor Lupin's students.
But they were close friends in the same year as Hogwarts. They must have been familiar with each other's performances.
Fudge retorted.
Overruled, said Madam Bones.
Remus said tightly,
I dare say 20 years ago Sirius could have got the jump on anyone. Before 12 years in Azkaban.
Ron sighed softly and punched Harry lightly on the arm. Good show, Remus.
No further questions,
grumbled Fudge.
You may step down, Professor Lupin. Call your next witness, Mr. McGonagall, said Madam Bones.
The defense calls Professor Severus Snape.
Hermione hissed softly, and Harry felt Ron and Ginny tense. He felt the same way. No one else in the courtroom made a sound as Professor Snape walked to the witness stand. He did not look at Sirius, or anyone else, and Harry could not read anything in his face except intense displeasure. Mr. McGonagall seemed the only person unaffected.
Please state your name for the record.
Severus Snape, said Snape curtly.
And you are a professor at Hogwarts?
I am.
Professor Snape, how long have you known the accused, Sirius Black?
26 years, said Snape, his scowl deepening.
Since your first year at Hogwarts?
Mr. McGonagall pressed.
Yes, Snape said darkly.
Harry noticed that the jury was looking intimidated. He couldn't decide if that was a good thing or not.
I see, said Mr. McGonagall. Would you describe your acquaintance with Sirius Black during your school days as amicable?
No.
Snape's emphatic tone caused whispers to ripple through the courtroom. Mr. McGonagall merely smiled.
And after school?
We were not amicable, Snape replied.
And now?
Snape's lip curled.
I have despised Sirius Black since the earliest days of our acquaintance, and there has never been any change in that opinion. I would wager that one of the few areas of agreement between us is the mutuality of that sentiment.
Sirius smirked. Someone behind Harry snorted quietly. Mr. McGonagall smiled.
Would you please explain to this court the first time you saw Sirius Black after he escaped Azkaban?
I followed Professor Lupin and three wayward students from the grounds and found Black with them.
What did you do?
I attempted to take Black and Lupin into custody. Snape's eyes flicked toward Harry in a reproachful glance. Unnecessary, Harry thought, since Snape had been wrong and now knew it. Mr. McGonagall asked,
And what did they say?
All of them protested Black's innocence.
But you did not believe them?
No.
Did Professor Lupin and the students explain why they were convinced Sirius Black was innocent?
I was not interested in hearing it. It was my duty to turn in Black and the man harboring him. Sirius rolled his eyes, and Ron growled under his breath. Mr. McGonagall went on.
What happened then?
Potter and his friends stunned me. When I awoke, I found them on the grounds with Black. They had barely survived the Dementor attack.
Did you learn then why they believed Sirius Black was innocent?
Yes. When the students regained consciousness, they insisted Peter Pettigrew was alive, that they had seen him, and he had confessed to turning over the Potters to the Dark Lord.
And how did you respond?
I assumed they had been confounded. The story seemed absurd. It was well published that Pettigrew was dead.
So the possibility that it might be true never occurred to you?
Asked Mr. McGonagall. No. Snape sounded less than delighted to be admitting his mistake.
Professor Snape,
Mr. McGonagall went on,
would you please explain to this court when you changed your mind about Sirius Black's guilt?
His voice lowered slightly. Snape replied, The night of the Triwizard Tournament's third task. Ginny scooted a little closer to Harry. He didn't mind. The courtroom was cold, and knowing what he was about to hear was only making it seem colder.
Please tell us what happened that night, said Mr. McGonagall.
Sometime after Harry Potter and Cedric Diggory disappeared from the third task, I felt the dark mark burn. I knew he had returned. Nearly everyone in the courtroom shivered. Snape went on, We, that's Headmaster Dumbledore and the Hogwarts staff, caught Barty Crouch in an attempt to murder Potter. He confessed to working with Peter Pettigrew to kidnap the boy for the Dark Lord's resurrection spell. Afterward, the Headmaster sent for Black.
Sir Albus Dumbledore did believe in Sirius Black's innocence by then.
Yes, Snape said sourly. He asked us to work together against the Dark Lord.
And did you?
I always did as he ordered, Snape growled.
But,
Mr. McGonagall pressed,
did you believe him about Sirius Black's innocence?
Yes.
Despite your personal animosity towards Mr. Black?
Yes.
Simply because Albus Dumbledore declared it?
Yes.
Are we to understand that you trusted Albus Dumbledore enough that his word was enough for you to work with a reputed murderer?
Snape's black eyes hardened. I trusted Albus Dumbledore enough to walk back into a circle of Death Eaters time and time again. This time, everyone in the room shivered. So did Harry. Mr. McGonagall nodded solemnly.
I see. And did you embark on a mission to spy against you-know-who that night?
I did.
Did you discover any further information that supported the claims of Sirius Black's innocence?
Yes. I saw Pettigrew.
Whispers rippled through the room. Ron elbowed Harry, directing his gaze surreptitiously to Fudge, and Harry saw that the Minister for Magic was clearly furious, a flush of red slowly creeping up from his collar toward his face. Mr. McGonagall, as always, was unconcerned.
Did you speak to him?
Only briefly that night, but on later meetings Pettigrew admitted repeatedly in my hearing to having framed Black as the betrayer of the Potters. He had also been the one spying on the Dark Lord's opponents during the last war.
I should have let them kill him, Harry muttered.
Ron elbowed him again, and Ginny murmured a little shh of protest.
So, Professor, you yourself heard Peter Pettigrew confess to all of the crimes with which Sirius Black is currently charged.
Yes, said Snape.
Thank you, Professor Snape. Your witness, Minister, said Mr. McGonagall.
Someone on the other side of Ginny muttered something very uncomplimentary about said minister as Fudge got to his feet. Harry shared the Weasley brothers' sentiments more than ever, feeling a surge of loathing that made his heart race as Fudge fixed calculating, beady eyes on Snape, and he found that he suddenly appreciated Snape's ability to stare a person down, for the potions master matched the minister's gaze with a smouldering glower of his own as Fudge began.
"So, Professor, you've changed your mind about Sirius Black, is that it?"
Coldly, Snape replied, "As far as his guilt in the matter of the Potters and Peter Pettigrew, yes."
"But as far as the rest of your opinion of him?"
"I still think him a bloody arrogant bastard, if that's what you mean," Snape replied. Sirius grinned nastily. A few people let out nervous chuckles. Fudge smiled, which Harry took as a bad sign.
"Professor Snape, didn't you insist, after the initial capture of Black 3 years ago, that he had used a confundus charm to convince the other eyewitnesses of Peter Pettigrew's involvement?"
"I did."
"In fact, you were very vehement in your denials of Black and the student's story, weren't you?"
"I was."
"And you had already been overcome by them once that night, correct?"
"Yes," Snape growled.
"And yet now you claim they were telling the truth?"
"Since I have seen Pettigrew with my own eyes, yes." Harry found himself breathing faster. Fudge was still smiling.
"Ah, yes, of course. You admit your error 3 years ago in not believing Harry Potter."
His gaze briefly went into the benches. Ron growled, and Ginny was holding Harry's hand so tight that her knuckles were white. Fudge went on.
"Professor, really, you've explained on and on what you think of Sirius Black. Isn't there the slightest chance in your mind that he engineered this scheme to win his freedom?"
"He could not have confounded Albus Dumbledore," Snape retorted, "nor me into seeing Peter Pettigrew serving the Dark Lord for the past 2 years."
"Ah, yes, in your spying duties," said Fudge.
Ron stiffened, and Hermione murmured,
"Here it comes."
"Why did you insist so strongly that Harry Potter and his friends were confounded?"
"I assumed there had been. I was wrong."
"Ah, yes, wrong," said Fudge, with a sly smile. "Like so many people who disagree with Harry Potter."
"Objection," Mr. McGonagall snapped as Harry stiffened.
"Goes to credibility," said Fudge.
"Overruled," said Madame Burns. Ginny uttered a rude word, getting murmurs of agreement from her brothers, and Harry braced himself as Fudge turned back to Snape.
"Professor Snape, I also recall from that night that you were somewhat disenchanted with the Wizarding World's young hero, weren't you?"
"I believed he was involved with Black's escape," Snape said tonelessly.
"And now?"
"I still believe it. Potter's made a career of winding up where he doesn't belong," said Snape. Ron snorted.
"That wasn't quite what I meant," said Fudge, still smirking.
He didn't smirk nearly as well as Snape, but it unnerved Harry anyway.
"I was referring to your well-established animosity toward Harry Potter."
Harry blinked. Snape's face betrayed no expression. "I do not understand the question." Fudge's smile broadened, and people in the benches around Harry were starting to shift curiously.
"Did you or did you not, for the past 5 years, express repeatedly to a variety of listeners your unmitigated dislike of Harry Potter?"
Snape scowled. "I did."
"Were you telling the truth, then?"
"Yes."
"And now? Would you say your attitude toward the boy is as antagonistic as ever?"
Snape hesitated. Hermione sucked in her breath. Several members of the Wizengamot, not to mention the press, leaned forward. Fudge added lightly,
"I remind you that you are under oath, my dear sir."
Through clenched teeth, Snape answered, "No." Whispers rippled through the room, and Harry's heart began to pound. Fudge went on gleefully,
"In fact, you now tutor Harry Potter in remedial potions, do you not?"
"Yes."
"And do you extend such assistance outside class to any other Newt-level students?"
"No," Snape growled. Harry fought the urge to groan as he realized what Fudge was up to.
"Who would have thought he'd try to convince everyone that Snape was lying to protect me?"
Fudge was just getting started.
"Harry Potter looks up to his godfather a great deal, doesn't he, Professor?"
"I suppose so."
"It would distress the child very much to lose him, wouldn't it?"
"Yes."
And you yourself have complained about Albus Dumbledore's favouritism towards him, haven't you?
I have, but...
Wasn't it on Dumbledore's orders that you began tutoring Potter outside of class?
Yes, Snape practically snarled.
But now you too are enamoured of the boy, aren't you?
Objection.
I am nothing of the kind, Snape roared, leaping to his feet. Harry was grateful to see Fudge backing up hastily.
Order!
Snapped Madam Bones. Fudge visibly collected himself, and Snape sat back down. But to Harry's horror, the minister began smiling again.
Professor Snape, you trusted Albus Dumbledore a great deal, didn't you?
I trusted him entirely, Snape replied.
You walked into you-know-who's circle of Death Eaters on his word, you said?
Yes, as a spy.
A spy, indeed. Very valuable.
Fudge simpered. Harry was breathing very fast.
You fooled you-know-who for years.
Yes, I did.
Did you ever kill in the course of your spying?
The looks some people were shooting Snape disturbed Harry greatly, more so when Snape replied flatly, Yes.
And on Dumbledore's word, you threw that spying duty away to rescue little Harry Potter.
There was a murmur of displeasure at those words, and Snape noticed it. Fixing cold black eyes on Fudge, he replied, To rescue a student held prisoner, yes.
But that student happened to be Harry Potter?
Yes.
But...
Harry was feeling a tremendous urge to beat that smile off Fudge's face with his fists.
You suggest that had the student not been the boy who lived, you would still have gone if Dumbledore had sent you.
Yes, Snape replied without hesitating.
Even though it meant losing valuable intelligence?
Yes.
Even if it had meant your life?
Every witch and wizard in the courtroom seemed to lean forward on their benches, waiting for Snape's reply. Yes.
Professor Snape, if Albus Dumbledore had sent you on a mission from which you knew there would be no return, would you have gone?
Yes.
You owed Dumbledore very much, didn't you?
Objection. Is there a point to this line of questioning?
Asked Mr. McGonagall, sounding bored.
I'd like to know that myself, Minister, said Madam Bones.
Fudge actually turned and bowed to her, making Ginny growl under her breath, and confirming Harry's fear that he still had more up his sleeve.
Very well, madam. I shall sum up this line in a final question. Professor Snape, you have told this court under oath that you would spy, kill, or die on Albus Dumbledore's word. Wouldn't you also lie?
Harry's breath caught. So did many other people's. Snape did not answer.
You owed Albus Dumbledore everything. But for him, you'd be rotting in Azkaban as the Death Eater you once were, wouldn't you? You would have done anything he asked, including lie to the Wizengamot for the sake of Harry Potter, wouldn't you?
Objection,
Mr. McGonagall said, for the first time sounding irritated. Harry was holding his breath. Madam Bones was watching Snape and Fudge, looking troubled, and Snape still wasn't answering.
Shall I repeat the question?
Fudge drawled. Slowly, furious, Snape said,
I would have died for Albus Dumbledore had he asked me to, but he never asked me to die, nor did he ever ask me to lie.
But you lied to you-know-who, didn't you? Fudge pressed. You were the perfect spy, a Death Eater with only one chance of escaping justice. And the late great Albus Dumbledore did adore Harry Potter, didn't he? Your only means of protection against you-know-who and the Ministry was to stay in Dumbledore's favour, wasn't it? Is it so hard for this court to imagine that you might lie here?
But Dumbledore is not here, Snape shot back.
No, but now Harry Potter's head of house is headmistress, and we all know her record where Potter is concerned.
Objection.
Sustained, said Madam Burns. That is quite enough, Minister.
Fudge turned back to Snape, his simper having slowly given way to an outright sneer.
Professor Snape, you became a spy for Dumbledore in the year 1981, did you not?
Yes.
And before that you were a Death Eater?
Yes, Snape said coldly.
Who only had a sudden change of heart, the very year you-know-who was first destroyed.
It was that year, yes.
scratching his head as though greatly puzzled. Fudge glanced over his shoulder at the jury.
Then tell us, Professor, why in heaven's name should this court of justice and honour believe a single word you say? Minister for prosecution. Black's witness list full of Death Eaters and werewolves. Harry Potter to testify tomorrow. A Rita Skeeter exclusive.
You have to eat, Harry, Hermione said quietly at dinner that night. The Great Hall was very quiet. Everyone was buzzing over the Daily Prophet, glancing surreptitiously at the Gryffindor table.
You'll feel even less like it tomorrow, but you can't go into this on an empty stomach.
Harry wasn't listening. He'd read what Fudge had told the newspapers after the day's testimony was over.
I must say, this is the most cockamamie defense I've ever seen. Wizards faking their own deaths, bringing people back from beyond the veil, a silver hand that can block a killing curse. Even you know who can't do some things. Now, I'll not have you think I blame poor Harry Potter. That child has been through enough to make any grown man shudder. It's no wonder the boy was vulnerable to black scheming. I suspect we'll discover that there were some charms or potions involved with winning Harry's trust. A shameless monster like Black is just the sort to prey upon the vulnerabilities of an orphan.
Remus had been right. Fudge was going to try to convince everyone that Harry was some sort of mental case touched in the head from everything that had happened.
Blimey, it's a wonder I'm not.
Funny thought, that. Especially back in third year, when he'd been hearing his mother and father's voices when the Dementors came, how badly he'd wanted a family. Sirius had been watching him all year. He had probably known what Harry saw when the Dementors were around, and Sirius was a good wizard. What if he... Harry had been so shaken by everything that night in the Shrieking Shack. What if Sirius had done something to him, to save himself? The rest of the denizens of Hogwarts' Great Hall were distinctly rattled when Harry Potter abruptly burst out laughing. Ron and Hermione jumped, then watched Harry with alarmed expressions until he stopped. Neville had a fork full of meat halfway to his mouth, and Ginny was staring. "Harry," Ron said cautiously, taking care not to touch him.
Are you okay?"
Wiping his eyes, Harry nodded, grinning to himself. "Yeah, fine, Ron. I need to go to remedial potions."
"Now?"
Hermione asked doubtfully. "Yeah." Harry stood up, not really seeing them anymore. "See you later, okay?" And he headed out of the hall, oblivious to the stares of his friends. He knocked for almost 5 minutes before Snape came to his office door, looking very annoyed. "Potter, what in God's name do you want?" Harry folded his arms.
"Remedial potions, for one thing, and to talk to you, sir."
Shaking his head in disgust, Snape turned away, but left the door open so Harry could follow. Once it closed, Snape turned back and said sourly, "I trust you enjoyed today's revelations."
"Oh, lay off!"
Harry snapped, too agitated to mind his words. "They were revelations, all right, like what a git Cornelius Fudge is, how gullible people are, and that Remus had already resigned before you ratted him out. Not to mention all that stuff about Sirius after my parents died." Snape crossed the floor of his office, absently turning around one of the jars with some unrecognizable blob inside before facing Harry again. "And?" he asked snidely. Harry sighed.
"And everything you've done for me. Everything you've risked."
"I suppose that's as close to gratitude as I'll get from a Potter," Snape remarked.
"I've thanked you before," Harry grumbled, starting to pace himself. He sighed again. "I really thought they'd believe you."
"I warned McGonagall that I might not be the unimpeachable witness he hoped. No one trusts a Death Eater. Ever."
"You're not a Death Eater," Harry protested.
"Thank you for the vote of confidence, Potter. I dare say that will convince everyone not in a position to influence the outcome of this trial," Snape sneered.
Harry threw himself into the chair opposite Snape's desk without being invited.
"We're losing, aren't we?"
"It rather depends on whose side you're on, doesn't it?"
When Harry shot him a furious look, Snape actually seemed to relent.
"You had best prepare yourself for tomorrow. It will be unpleasant, and quite possibly in vain."
"I know," Harry sighed, rubbing his forehead. His scar itched. "That's why I came." He got up again, facing Snape and trying to look taller. "We have to prove Pettigrew's alive."
"Dear God, the boy's trying to bring me into one of his harebrained schemes,"
Snape snorted.
"Will you cut it out?" Harry shouted. "I'm coming to you for help! From the Order!"
"Be quiet,"
Snape snapped at him, and threw a silencing charm on the door and walls for good measure.
"Potter, the trial will be over in 48 hours at the latest, and Sirius Black will most likely be convicted and back in Azkaban until the Minister can lure back a Dementor or two."
"Then we'd better work fast, hadn't we?"
Harry shot back. Snape cut him off with a wave of his hand.
"The proof would have to be unquestionable, that Pettigrew is alive and in the Dark Lord's service."
"Then..."
Harry hesitated for a moment.
"We'd have to capture Wormtail. He'd be the proof.
Nobody could say Sirius was guilty of killing him then, and I bet he'd confess once he was cornered to killing my parents."
"He always stays close to the Dark Lord," Snape told him. "Pathetic little bastard, but he has his uses. They won't allow his existence to be discovered easily."
"But he's their spy," Harry argued. "He's probably around the trial somewhere, watching, especially since we're trying to tell everyone about him. I bet you anything he's there."
Snape shot him a withering look. "Do not suggest betting anything, Potter, or you may find yourself paying that price. Pettigrew may be a coward, but to survive as long as he has in anonymity, he is not a fool. He will not reveal himself easily."
It suddenly occurred to Harry, as he paced around the room with Snape watching him, that Snape hadn't said no. He hadn't refused outright. With that rush of hope, Harry slowed down his rambling and said carefully,
"Maybe if we could lure him somehow, if there was a way to tempt him into it."
"As with all of them, he desires the Dark Lord's approval. The day a Death Eater loses his usefulness is often his last day on Earth," Snape said slowly. "There is little information being revealed at the trial that would tempt Pettigrew to risk exposure. Every word spoken there appears in the Daily Prophet."
"So information's not good enough, then,"
said Harry, turning toward him and meeting his eyes. Snape stared at him, then snorted.
"Don't be ridiculous, Potter."
"It'd work, wouldn't it?"
"No, it wouldn't bloody work," Snape snapped at him. "Do you honestly believe a single member of the Order of the Phoenix would consider you a risk worth taking for capturing Peter Pathetic Pettigrew?"
"It'd save Sirius."
"If you succeeded in getting the rest of the Order to agree to this, if we managed to prepare a suitable trap by tomorrow morning, if Pettigrew in fact took the bait, and if he didn't end up killing another 13 people in his escape this time, you might succeed in exonerating the mangy mutt,"
Snape informed him sarcastically.
"I rather doubt even Black would consider it worth the risk."
"Well, I do," Harry said fiercely.
"You were 16 years old, Potter," Snape said. "You will find that your priorities are distinctly different from those of us who have been fighting this war for decades."
"It'd be a blow to Voldemort, too, to lose Wormtail," Harry insisted. "You said yourself he's valuable. If we exposed him, he'd stop being useful."
"It would require more resources than the Order has to set such a plan in motion while still protecting you," Snape told him.
"So get some auras in on it," Harry replied. "We have enough who sympathize with us now. We could probably get enough. Look..."
He took a step towards Snape.
"Professor, the Order needs Sirius too. You said yourself once he was capable."
Snape muttered something about taking it back, but Harry ignored him.
"And we could hit the Dark Lord too. He'd lose his best spy, and we'd gain one more member of the Order, free, and fudge out of the way."
Snape snorted. "I cannot deny the last thought has its appeal."
Harry felt himself grin, but Snape fixed him with a hard stare.
"There will be no heroics, Potter."
Harry opened his mouth, but the potions master held up a hand.
"I will present your idea to the Order. I do not doubt that others will see merits to the suggestion, but whatever their decision, you will abide by it. Do you understand?"
Harry nodded calmly. "So long as you ask them."
"If they approve, you will do precisely what we say, when we say, and under no circumstances attempt to take matters into your own hands, including any attempt to go after Pettigrew on your own."
Harry took a deep breath. "Okay." Snape looked hard at him, and he nodded, trying to sound older than he felt right at that moment.
"I agree. I'll follow orders."
"In that case..."
Snape went to a bookshelf on one wall and pulled out a narrow text, marking 2 pages. These spells have not yet been covered in your defense classes. They are normally taught only to Aurors, but should you confront Pettigrew or any other Death Eaters, you will need them. Learn them while I speak to the headmistress.
Yes, sir.
The next morning found Severus Snape working his way through the milling reporters and bystanders outside the Ministry building. Publicity and public curiosity were running so high in anticipation of Harry Potter's testimony that anti-Muggle charms had been placed around the surrounding city blocks, and signs at the entrance to the area warned of a gas main break. Slipping out of the crowd, Severus joined Alastor Moody in what any bystander would assume was two fellow defense witnesses taking a stroll outside to relieve the tension.
"Potter's on his way out now,"
Moody muttered at him.
"Where's Lupin?" Severus asked.
"Arthur's talking to him downstairs,"
said a voice in Snape's ear, Tonks from the sound of it.
"He thinks Harry's with Ron and Hermione."
Severus glanced casually down the street and spotted the Metamorph Magus, to all appearances just another curious spectator, mingling in the crowd. The long listeners, a variant on Weasley extendable ears made exclusively for the Order, enabled the team of Aurors and Order members to communicate over hundreds of yards, sometimes nearly a mile, without speaking above a whisper.
"I just got a visual on Potter,"
said Emmeline Vance from inside the building.
"He's given his friends the slip, coming up the back exit."
"Impressive. The boy does know how to follow directions," Severus muttered. Someone snorted at him.
"You don't give him enough credit, Snape," said Aurus Netterson. "How fast did the lad learn the crystal ball shield?"
Severus didn't answer, and several voices laughed in his ear.
"Less than an hour,"
Tonks supplied.
"Shut up, you lot. Keep your eyes on the job,"
said Moody sharply, and they subsided.
"He's on the road, headed my way,"
said Lee Jordan. Anyone who saw the boy would assume Potter had had enough of the crowds and was sneaking out to clear his head. Severus spotted the boy as he and Moody took the road parallel to him. Perhaps Potter was a better actor than he thought, at least when it came to feigning aimless wandering.
"Are you disillusioned?"
Tonks asked someone.
"Yeah, he's passing me now,"
said Jordan.
"Vance, report," said Moody.
"In position,"
Emmeline said.
"Park's empty behind me. I put up a ward-off charm at the end of the street for anyone here to watch the trial. They'll stay close to the Ministry for the next hour."
"Anything on the south side of the street?" Snape asked.
"We're clear here. Wait."
Snetterton hesitated, and everyone held their breath. When the old Aura spoke again, his voice was even lower.
"Rat in the gutter, lads. Repeat, rat in the gutter. About 50 yards north of me.
Have you got a visual on its paw yet?"
hissed Vance.
"Not yet, but he's headed my way. Wait, wait.
Potter just passed me,"
Vance announced.
"I'm about to apparate ahead of him again. Snape, Moody, keep up with him."
Severus blinked, cursed himself, and he and Moody quickly sped up to walk parallel to Potter again.
"Any bloody time now, Snitty. Not all of us have enchanted eyes, my lad, so mind your own. Wait, confirmed. Repeat, I confirm. We have a rat with a silver paw moving south toward Frimley Park."
"Got that, Harry?"
Tonks's voice said in a whisper.
"Turn toward the park. We'll have a clear sight of you and him there."
"Mm-hmm," was the cautious reply.
"Good lad,"
said Snetterton.
"Snatty, don't lose the rat."
"I've got him, Jordan. Relax. Hang on, let me get out of his way. He's passing me in front of the old florist shop. Don't know if he can see Potter from here, but he's definitely moving toward the boy."
"Got visual,"
said Vance.
"Rat's headed straight toward the park." "Slow down a bit, Harry,"
said Tonks.
"Let him think he's heading you off."
Potter obeyed, shuffling his feet, appearing to all observers as nothing more than a sullen teenager with his mind occupied with sulking. Severus found himself once again unable to help feeling impressed.
"Hold here,"
said Moody, catching him at a stone wall with a clear view of the park as the boy ambled toward it.
"Vance and Snetty are closer. At this distance we can cut the little bugger off if he tries to run."
"Get ready to seal those sewers, Jordan," Snape ordered.
"All set. Rats in the park,"
whispered Vance.
"Maybe 30 feet in front of me."
"Potter, take a few steps to your left," said Moody. "Keep out of our line of fire."
As Potter obeyed, Severus caught a flicker of movement down the street on the opposite side of the park.
"Snetterton, what's..."
"Bloody hell, we've got a Hogwarts student heading this way,"
Moody swore.
"Probably one of yours, Snape, if he's pushing through ward-off charms."
That's a Gryffindor habit, Snape retorted, squinting at the vague figure wandering toward the park. The last thing we need is some stupid brat getting caught in the crossfire. But something was off. Snetterton, have you got a visual on a face yet?
It's a chap.
Moody turned sharply towards Severus.
What's a student doing with this hood up in May?
Something hard and cold settled in Snape's chest.
I don't like the smell of this,
muttered Tonks.
Harry, hold back a sec. We've got a... Harry?
The boy was still walking. A curse at the teenager's recklessness died on Snape's lips when Jordan hissed frantically.
Did someone activate an anti-apparition ward around the park? What? No?
Vance exclaimed.
Potter!
Moody hissed into his mouthpiece.
Potter, come in! Emergency, Potter, respond!
No answer.
I've lost the signature of Potter's portkey,
Vance rasped, panic creeping into her voice.
Snape, I've got visual on the other kid,
said Snetterton shakily.
It's Draco Malfoy.
Moody whipped out one of his muted pocket dark detectors and began cursing furiously at the sight of it flashing all variety of warning colors as Severus leapt over the wall. Sprinting with all his might toward the entrance to the park, he shouted at the top of his lungs,
Harry, it's a trap!